Well, good morning to everybody. My name is Father Ercole, as you know. First of all, I would like to thank Bishop Dolan for having me here today. It's the first time I had to tell how I became a priest. Well, I will try my best to tell you some important events in my life. And thank you all for being here. You know, I was born in Argentina, for South America. It's a country which has an 87% of Europeans' origins. Mostly they are Italians' backgrounds and Spanish. And my family is actually from those two. My father's background Italians, that's my family name. And my mother from Spain, Barcelona. So it's a warm combination. My family is unfortunately no traditional Catholics, at least not all of them, but they have traditional values. For example, I am one of nine children. So we received all traditional, so to speak, or conservative Catholic training. My father used to tell us at home that in Argentina there were only two careers, to be a military or to be a priest. And he wanted me to be a military. He sent me to a military academy, a high school, to become an officer in the army. And I went there for 4 years, and I wanted to become a military. And at a certain point, I met some traditional Catholic priest from the Society of St. Pius X. And so I was invited to visit the seminary. And of course I liked it, but nothing else than that. Until I was invited to make a spiritual retreat. You certainly know what is that. I was 16 years old and I didn't know what was that. Even meditation for me was absolutely unknown. You know, five boys, 16 or 17 years old, having meditation. But I did. I said, yes, why not? Something I used to say, but I should change it. And I did. It was a spiritual exercise for 30 days. 30 days closed in the seminary. And so, of course, I couldn't resist the grace of God and all those prayers, you know. Some other seminarians were praying for me. I didn't know that after. And so I decided to quit the school, to quit, so to speak, my family, because they were not following traditional faith. And to quit my friends to become a seminarian. And I remember what my father used to tell us, military or priest. And when I told him I wanted to become a priest, he was not happy at all. So, but after a while, he had to admit it. So I did those 30 days, and I decided to enter the seminary. It was in May 1988. I remember during that month of exercises, in one of the walks we did, with the other, we had a walk, a recreation every Saturday afternoon, and I remember that we were told in the seminary that Bishop Lefebvre, Archbishop Lefebvre, decided to consecrate those bishops. So we were all happy. At that time, we were all happy, and even we had a singing the Magnificat to thank God. I remember that. And then they were consecrated in 1988. So I entered the seminary the following fall. It was in Argentina, it's March 1989. And at that time, many changes were going on in the seminary, especially in the seminary in the district of South America. For example, the rector of the seminary was changed. He was removed. He was sent to Chile. Something similar would happen with Father Sambor, Bishop Sambor. You remember that he was also removed from the seminary. So I entered and I heard and learned many things being there. Especially what I most remember is that there were basically two factions in the seminary. There were those hardliners and those softliners. We used to call them the liberals. And we were not wrong. So after a few months, a group of seminarians decided to address Bishop Lefebvre, Archbishop Lefebvre, to let him know that there were many things that were not well in the seminary. And so there was a kind of an investigation. Father Schmidberger sent at the time some priest to look at the seminary and see what was going on. And then he himself came. And to make the story short, he sent us away. He said, either you accept it or you go. And we said, we better go. It was only 3 or 4 months being a seminarian there. So we left the seminary, 21 seminarians and one priest. I was in first year, I didn't have cassock, so I have to wait. And the first place we went to, it was a family house. One of the parishioners lent us a house. You can imagine it was a family house, and then other than his family, this family, we were more than 20 clergy in the house. We stayed there for a week. And it was a long week. So fortunately, this family had money, and they were also generous. And so we borrowed from them a property in the country. It was like 50 miles away from the city. It was a small house, I could say 4 rooms, with a big piece of land. And so from those 4 rooms, one turned into chapel. We had meditation, we had mass. The offices, as you know, in the seminary, we did it. The other was the kitchen. And then only 2 bedrooms left. So we managed to fit, you know, everybody there. I remember the rector was outside in a small tent. But it was, of course, there was some, you know, for accommodation, it was not easy. Especially, I remember there was one of the seminarians, big one. He was the one going to bed and started snoring, you know. So everybody was laughing, he couldn't sleep. And that for you know, a few days until the rector said, well, we better figure it out, you know, a solution for this. So what he did, he rented some tents, you know, to expand the accommodation. And he was the one, the first one to be sent, you know. So, and, yes, yes. Well, eventually we all, you know, accommodated, you know, in different tents. And, oh, that was fixed for the moment. The second biggest problem was the cooking. I mean, it wasn't really a big problem, but it was a problem. we didn't have a cook, and so we all had to learn how to cook. I mean, at least we had to cook. And there were four teams, I remember. There was a chief, and everybody has to rotate every week. And you cannot imagine those surprises. Well, there were no surprises for us, tell you what. We couldn't do better, but I remember all those days. For example, there was one day, there was a seminarian. The first thing we did is when you buy those things to cook, you read the instructions how to, the quantities and everything. So there was one directing the others in the kitchen and put in this and make sure that we are 25 or so, added by, you know, 4 by 5. And one day there was, I remember that, somebody was trying to make a cake. I think a banana cake or something like this. And he couldn't figure the number of eggs, so he afterwards confessed he put like maybe 25 eggs because he figured at least one for each one. So the cake was that flat and hard, you know. So it was more than as a homelette, you know, rather than the cake. But we ate it. So that was the cooking, and then you can imagine it was not enough in the kitchen, a small kitchen. What we did, we digged out in the ground, like in the Boy Scouts. We digged in the ground, we put like a grill and then a big pot to make it fast. But, you know, it wasn't always, the pasta wasn't always al dente, as you know. But we did it. So we were poor. We were poor. We didn't have much money. And at the time, there was only one family helping us. There was close by a place where they killed animals, cattle. In Argentina, we had a lot of cattle meat. It was in a slaughterhouse. And so we did have at least once a week a good barbecue. That's another good memory, those days. And so we remained there for 9 months. We didn't expect so long, but time goes fast. We started in winter, all the way down to December. It's summer in Argentina. And so from there, we moved north of the country, 500 kilometers. It's about 350 miles north in Cordoba. And we arrived by Christmas time. And so I received this cassock on Christmas. We had a big solemnity there. And after 9 months, we were very happy to receive the vestition, the cassock. In spite of all that, I can tell after almost 20 years, more than 20 years, it was my best year of seminary. I had enjoyed. In spite of the material necessity that we had, and of course I cannot tell all the things we did, it was a nice time. Everybody was together. We were, as I said, 21 seminarians and one priest. By the end of that year, other six seminarians joined the seminary. Other six priests decided to quit the society, or they were just to put on the street because they agreed with us. Everybody was together. All those material necessities helped us to appreciate more the spiritual life and eventually to reinforce our vocation. We went to Cordoba and many things changed. Some for the better, some for the worse. The property was very big. It was like a 300 hectares. And the facility, the building was very nice. Before the council, it was holding 500 minor seminaries. It was 500 students. A half were seminarians, a half were from the outside. But that building was closed right after the council. And so you can imagine it was not occupied for almost 30 years, and there was, again, a lot of work. And that was some heavy work. For example, we have to clean the canals. We had two rivers in the property, and the water was coming from one of these rivers all the way to the property, to the building. So we had to dig and clean for many years. It was abandoned. We had to build the filters so that we could have potable water. We had to cook. And again, you know, that that was tough. And because also it takes your time of studying, but we didn't have a choice. There was a lady who used to say in Italy, primum vivere deinde philosophare. You have to first live and then to make philosophy. You know, it's true. We have to cook. And that in that occasion I remember something very funny too. There was we didn't have much money again, but the necessary to live. And I remember we didn't have meat every day, maybe once a week. And there was a seminarian who was a good cook, and he made a soup for us, a special soup. And I remember that we were, you know, happy. It was very good tasting. And so he went, because always after he cooked, he went to the tables, you know, saying, how is everything, you know? Oh, yes, it's very good. Well. And then when he said, what he put on it. He was hunting a possum. Well, I tell you what, it was, you know, one of the rector, when he knew that, he was furious, you know. And eventually he controlled everything, you know, after that. So, you showed me the menu in advance. So, but it was tasty, I tell you what, you believe me. Another big work we had in that place was all in the front. We had like 5 or 6 hectares of the property. But it was abandoned, so many weeds and trees, bad trees, were growing. And so we had to cut them down and eventually to clean. And we did that for at least 1 year, working every Saturday. I remember that because I was in the team of those who were with the hatchet. We didn't have the saw, electric saw or whatever. We were 4. Every Saturday from 2 to 6, you know, to cut those trees and then with a tractor to pull them out. And we did a good job, I remember. and it was tiring, but we were enjoying that everything was keeping clean and nice. So I said some things happened there. We remained there for 2 years. And unfortunately, the devil is smart and he wasn't happy with us. And some of the seminarians got discouraged, especially those who were older and wanted to become a priest. And so we didn't have a bishop. And for us, especially in the first year, what we learned in Society of St. Pius X, it was that only four bishops in the world were the only one Catholics. And if you quit the society, you quit the church, basically. So we didn't know anybody else to come and have the ordinations for us. But the good God provided, and so we found a bishop from Mexico, a bishop the same lineage of Bishop Donan, Bishop Martinez. And so he accepted to come, but eventually we had lost two or three seminarians by then. And so I started seeing certain divisions in the group, which I didn't see before. For me, it was the first year, as I said, it was like being in heaven. Everything was nice, pious. There was a big friendship among us. All the priests were together. But little by little, that was showing different aspects. So some of us left. And we had the ordination, the first ordination. We have two priests who were ordained in the second year, at the end of the second year. We remained there for about 1 year more, until the superior of us, they were the superior, the rector of the seminary, and the superior of this all group of priests and seminarians, the superiors got in a fight with the people who gave us that property from Mexico. So those people gave us that property with a price. And the priest, who was the superior, said, we cannot accept it. So eventually, those people tried to sow the dissensions or division in our groups, in the priest, and to a certain extent, they succeeded. When there is money, there is always power behind, and some people cannot resist. So there was an order. He was in Mexico, our superiors. He told our rector to leave the property and to move to Mexico. And we did. So here again, packing and moving. This trip was much longer than we thought. We moved to Mexico, and again, we started in a family who was very generous. And we remained there for others, I could say 1 year in that property. We used to go to this mass center where the congregation was. And in all this time, we kept studying as we could, but it wasn't much. And also, again, discouraging, some of the seminarians left. And some of the priests also were kind of fighting for things, certain things, you know, who would be the next superior, so for how many years, why you and I and me, which kind of rules we should take. Some wanted Jesuits, others Benedictines, Carmelites, and so on. And So there was another split. There was another split, and the bishop was in the middle, and all the seminarians, so most of us followed the rector, and the others followed the superior, other priests, seminarians. And at that moment, I started wondering, you know, should I be all my life moving and splitting and cooking? Maybe yes. What about finding a different, you know, possibility? I don't know. Is this the only seminary in the world? Well, so there were some problems, you know, and I wanted to start it, finish my seminary. It was my fourth year seminary, or actually starting the fourth year. So I spoke to my rector and eventually to the bishop, and I said, I want to depend from you now on, and if you could find me a place to be trained and eventually one day to be ordained a priest. He said, fine. He understood my reasons. He accepted me. We were three seminarians together, one Mexican, one Colombian, and myself. We left with the bishop, but we stayed in touch with the group, more or less. We depended from the bishop. The bishop sent us to a priest close to Mexico City. And there again, there were some problems going on, and serious problems. So we remained there for about 7 months. We went back to speak to the bishop. We said, again, we explained, we don't have this, and this is wrong. And he accepted, he agreed. So we pulled out, went back to the bishop. And so the bishop said, well, there are two possibilities, or actually one possibility, he said. He said, there is a bishop in North America, in the United States, Bishop McKenna. He could be able to train you and eventually to send you back, being ordained here. For me, it was impossible to learn English. I said, no way, but I don't know, but maybe it's the case I have to learn English. That was one of the most hated matters I had in high school. But eventually you start liking it. You're better. The thing is that I was searching around, and I said, I heard that there was a group of priests in Italy, they had a good seminary. So I talked to the bishop and said, why we don't try with these people? I think they, you know, I mean, Italian for me, it was easier than English. He said, well, let me find out if that it would be possible. So what he did, he contacted this priest, Institute of Mother of Good Counsel in northeast of Italy. He contacted this priest saying, I have three good seminarians. They are good. You have to take them. So the priest said, the rector said, fine. Let them come. We take them. So the bishop came and gave us the good news. I found for you a seminary, and this is a good one. There is only one thing I need from you before leaving. He said, you will have to make an agreement, like sign some papers, and then we will do a ceremony in front of the Blessed Sacrament so that you will return here. I will ordain you, and you will be working for me. And so we all said, fine. It's fine. Let's do it. As you get ready for that, I will be back next weekend. He used to travel the weekend, so we had the bishop at home in this chapel for the weekend. So he left on Sunday evening, and we start talking, these three seminarians, Again, some problems. So one of them said, no way, I quit. So what are you talking about? The other one said, no, I don't quit, but I won't sign. So asking me, what about you? Yes, I will sign. What is wrong with that? Why not? And then, so, but I started thinking, I said, what is he really asking me or us that we couldn't do it? So I went to talk to other priests that I had, some friends, and good friends. Two priests, they told me right away, you better sign that paper because I know that bishop. If you don't, it will be the end for you. So fine. At the most, you can explain after that you did it by force because you have no choice. If you want to become a priest, you better sign. That augmented my doubts. So I went to another priest who was the former rector of the seminary. He was a very well-trained priest. I trusted him very much. And I said, by the way, now he's a bishop. You know? Bishop Neville consecrated him. Father Morello, Bishop Morello. So I asked Father Morello at the time, what do you think about this? He said, oh, no, you are not supposed to do it. Actually, Bishop asked me to take that letter, but it's not for you. It's for somebody who is going to be ordained, and then you can do it. And I explained, can I do it just like this? And then explain after that I was like a fourth or whatever. He goes, oh, no, you better go speak up. Really? Yes, you do it. And I did it. Oh, my goodness. No. You better don't deal with bishops when they are upset. So I explained to the bishop, I said, listen, Your Excellency, I have, you know, thought and prayed and eventually asked some advice what to do about what you are asking. And he was listening to me, you know, very quietly, and said, well, I'm promised I would like to work with you. I would like to do it. And but why just send me there, and then after finishing the seminary, you know, 3-4 years, I came back here, and then you ordained me, I signed all those papers. He said, well, let me think about that, you know, I think you reflected, and this is your decision, fine, let me give a thought. So, and, well, he left that weekend. At least we stopped the conversation. Everything was fine. He called the secretary. He said to the secretary, you book a ticket for this seminarian, not to Italy, but to Argentina. He's going back home. He has no vocation. So I didn't know that. I was happy that he accepted my explanation. And so these people, the secretary, this family that helped us very much, we had some friendship with them, so they called me. So we had to speak to you. I said, fine, come over. I was in the rectory. And he said, Bishop wants you to go home. I said, what? I'm going to Italy. No, you didn't understand. When did you speak to Bishop? Yesterday night. You sure? So I speak yesterday afternoon. Oh, he said that to you? Well, I couldn't believe it. And he said, they said, we want to help you. I think this is not fair. We think that you have vocation. We want to help you. I said, how can we help me? How can you help me? Well, we can write to the priest because they were the contact, you know. They were contacting those Italian priests. We can tell them that you are not coming anymore, sent by Bishop Martinez, but you are coming by yourself. I said, what are you talking about? They don't know me. But just to show up and say, please, can you open the doors? I want to study here without any recommendation. I was completely destroyed. Believe me, it was one of the hardest crosses. It didn't last long. But I thought after 4 years, I trusted all myself, after all those years, to the bishop. And he just sent me home like this. I said, wow, you know what? There is nothing, absolutely nothing that you can do in that position. I said, you know what? You do whatever you think. I don't think it's going to work, you know. Let's hope. Well, what happened was that they sent the fax, you know, their priest, you know, we have a seminarian, as you know, he is willing to go, but he is not going anymore, sent by Bishop Martinez, but he would like to be accepted by himself. And there was right away an answer, yes, he can come, he is accepted. When they showed me the fact, I said, no, you wrote it. It's impossible. How can you be accepted? It's not just, you know, the next state, you know. It's to cross the ocean, to go to those lands. Nobody knew me. Well, it was providential because just the week before, there was a priest visiting those priests, this seminary, that knew me very well, and he told them that, you know, that I was a good seminarian, so eventually they listened more to that priest than to the bishop, and I was saved. So I was admitted. I made a trip. I went to study, to finish my seminary in Italy, 1994. It was in January. And it was foggy and cold, here again. But we had a good cook, I tell you what. Wonderful cook. Oh my goodness. We had a lot of fun in that seminary. Not at the beginning, though, for me. It was very different. And even though I have Italian blood, and for me, the Italians were very cold. Very cold. I don't know, you know, especially in the beginning, but when I visited the first time France and Belgium and Germany, I said, no, the Italians are not that cold, let's get back to it. And so I enjoyed those 4 years of seminary. I had met Father Ricosa, Francesco Ricosa, the director of the seminary, and for me was a big help in any sense. Even though he was cold in the beginning, I remember after 3 months I spoke to him. I was on Sunday evening I was the altar boy, and he goes, let me say, come va? Say, how are you? You know, after 3 months I was, you know, I'm fine, you know, still fine. I was surprised he asked me, you know, but at least it was something. So the Father Ricosa, who is, in my opinion, one of the most prepared, intelligent priests I ever met, and very realistic, and that's what I learned with them for 4 years. The first day I arrived there, he told me something that I didn't know, at least not in the previous seminary. He said something very realistic. He says, canonically, there is no superior here. I was kind of shocked. I said, there is no superior? I am not canonically the rector of the seminary, you know. And it was true, because he started the seminary without the blessing of any priest, any bishop, like it used to be in the church. But he said right away, you better obey me or you go. You know, it's fine. So I started distinguishing between canon law and, in real life, you know. And it's fine, you know. It's fine. And he understood. But he said also something that I will never forget. He said at a certain point when I have to either enter or just keep the studies and going where, you know, to work with another bishop or priest, he said to me something. He said, you are free to join the group, the institute. If you like it, if you feel happy with that, you join it. If you don't like it, if you prefer not to do it, or you know something better, it's fine, you can do it, you know. You are free to do it. But you do it in conscience, he said. Either to get in, to enter the group, or not to enter. Or the one day you decide to quit for some reason. You do it in conscience. And I remember that words. For me, is the most realistic words you can have in today's crisis of the church. That is to say, there is no binding authority. There is no pope. And this problem is not only here in Cincinnati area, but even in Argentina and Europe, we have the same problems among the clergy and, of course, on the parishes. So that every one of us, clergy and parishioners, faithful, we should act in conscience. You and I, all of us, we will give an account of it. For me, that was the most binding tie to take a decision, to decide either to enter or not. So I spent there 4 years, and after 3.5 years, my spiritual director called me to the room. Actually, nobody knew when it was the ordination day. He was sick. We just had to study, and they would take care of that. And, of course, when you are promoted to be ordained as a deacon, that was the certitude that you must, you know, certainly go through, and then you became ordained in 6 months. And that was with me. The spiritual director called me to his room and said, you know, well, you can be ordained subdeacon if you want. I said, what? Well, I mean, of course I want, but you have to tell me if I can or I cannot. No. If you don't want it, you are not ordained. I said, well, I mean, I would like it, but you are supposed to tell me you go, you don't, because he was confessing me for 3.5 years. And there was kind of dispute. No, you. He said, no, look, he said, you do a novena to Our Lady of Good Counsel. She will fix it. I said, I hope she will, but, you know. I mean, I was taught all my life that the spiritual director will tell you for sure. If you are prepared, if you are ready, go ahead, or to stop, step back, or eventually to leave the spiritual life, to get married. But he wanted me to learn by myself. Of course, he wanted me to be a priest. But there are certain decisions you have to take in life that rely only on yourself. So I have prayed, you know, and after 9 days, you know, I went, he asked me, come over and let's talk about what you think. I said, well, I would like to, you know, but again, if you, well, I think you can go ahead. So I got ordained subdeacon, and then deacon, and then the priest, the priestly ordination. Usually it was Bishop McKenna is supposed to do it, because he was holding the same theological position at the institute, the formaliter vacancy of the apostolic see, you know, that he was a little different with Bishop Dolan and Father Echecada. But there, just a few weeks before the time established for the ordination, there was a fax in the machine saying that Dr. Kumaraswamy, a married person, was ordained a priest, and Bishop McKenna did it. So we say, no way. You know, I mean, I didn't say anything. I have to say, yes, Father, you know, but the superior said, we cannot have Bishop McKenna anymore. So he contacted Bishop Donnan, said, Bishop Donnan, we are having a deacon here waiting for being ordained. Could you please come? Right away. Tickets, hotel reservation, everything. He accepted. So in the meantime, we had another fax in the machine saying, no, it was a false alarm. Well, thank God it was a false alarm, but in any case, everything was arranged. Bishop Father Ricosta asked me, what would you like to do, to go with Bishop Donnan or with Bishop McKenna? Well, I said, everything is ready. The most important thing is that I will be ordained, you know. And it was providential, too, because after a few years, I came to this country and working with Bishop Dolan as well. So God knew why. And he ordained me. It was in October the 12th, 1997, almost 13 years ago. And that was my seminary life. So it was kind of short in some aspects, because you are never trained enough. At the same time, it was rife sometimes, but God always showed His providence, His protections. I never had any personal money or material goods, and He always provided for that. And not only that, all the graces during those years of training. The priest life today is not easy, as it isn't neither the family life, to persevere, to be a good Christian, to raise the children good Christians. There are many hardships. But God knows why all that happening in our lives. And what I am just telling you, I can be sure that many other seminarians and priests did the same or more. Again, God knows. And I think that it is necessary somewhat to be trained to be a fighter today. Not only in the seminary, in the priestly life, but also in the family life. All those kids are living today in the year 2010 with this so corrupted society and war, and they must become good Christians, persevere and save their souls in this war. So somewhat they must be trained to be fighters, to be good Christians. We're not supposed to keep them hidden in the refrigerators or whatever, so that they are preserved nice and cool. Well, as for you, faithful, I encourage you to continue to pray and to support vocations, which is, as you know, the hopes of the church, for the hopes of your families, too. Because without priests, you have no sacraments, and it's morally impossible to be a Christian, to be a good Christian without sacraments. Maybe you may not receive all the time what you expected from a priest or from a religious person, because we all carry our miseries, our defects. We have all our temperaments. Each priest, I tell you what. But be sure that the good Lord is still merciful And he continues to dispense his graces every day through these instruments, these unworthy instruments, the priest. And so you pray for them. You pray for the seminarians. You encourage your children how great it is to be a priest, so that may be attracted by those things and eventually became a priest one day. You pray for them, you support them, and all the support, not only the money, but all your time, your sacrifices you do for the church is done, is given to God, and it will be certainly rewarded. Even if not in this world, it will be certainly rewarded in heaven. God knows all of your sacrifices, and that's the only thing that matters. He will be rewarding you eternally in heaven. God bless you all, and thank you for listening.